Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to the New Books in Education, a channel in the New Books Network. My name is Yakir Englander, your host today. Jen Simmons devoted her career as a social worker and educator to the study, treatment, and care of children with autism. In 1955, she established the Linwood Children's Center in Maryland, one of the first schools dedicated to children with autism. Her Linwood model, developed there, was widely adopted and still forms a basis for a variety of autism intervention techniques. Incredibly, although unknown at the time, Jean was herself autistic. Behind the Mirror reveals a remarkable tale of Simone. In this interview, I speak with Dr. Sabine Oishi, who co-authored this book with Simone's and also their first book, The Hidden Child. Welcome, Sabine, to the New Book Podcast. My question for you is, can you tell me and us a little bit about the process of writing and editing and bringing the memoir of Jean Simmons?
Well, this started out quite accidentally. Jean... I had been asked to write about Jean Simmons' methods, treatment methods, which had never been written down the whole time that she practiced at Linwood. She had retired. She was in frail health. People were afraid that her methods, which had been taught by example, would get lost. And so they were looking for somebody to try and tease out the different elements of her method and then write them down. And I was lucky enough to get that job. And I spent a year at her center, Linwood, which she founded in 1955, exclusively for children on the spectrum. And the end result of that year of observing at Linwood and going through old materials and talking to Jean was our book, The Hidden Child. During that time, I obviously got to know Jean Simmons somewhat. And by happenstance, I came across in the old materials that she handed me, a little vignette that she had written about her childhood. And I read that. It was very vivid. It's a description that is in the book. And I thought, well, this is describing an autistic child. But this woman, she's a world authority. She's an international star. And, you know, there's absolutely no indication that she's anything but, you know, well-functioning professional. Anyway, I eventually asked her, and she said, oh, yes, I'm autistic. I didn't know that until I was middle-aged, and it really doesn't make any difference, I don't think. Well, I thought it made a difference because it explained her uncanny ability to find the entry points into treatment with these very, very difficult children. She started telling me a little bit more about her life, and it was fascinating. Her life as such was like an adventure story. But what she told me and what she had written also in some vignettes about her childhood was an absolute treasure trove, because it described in vivid and minute detail the enormous challenges that a what we now call neurodivergent child meets along the way from birth on and through the rest of their lives. I had never ever in literature read anything that even approached that kind of detail. And I urged her to tell me more, and I then urged her to let me find a publisher for this story. So we spent a lot of time, and I listened and I wrote it down, and then I tried to find a publisher and I couldn't. That was back in 1988 or so. At that point, autism was not at all on the front burner. And people said, oh, memoirs, you know, they don't sell well. So I put it in the drawer. Eventually, Jean Simmons died. And a few years ago, I took it out again. I had promised her that I would try and get it published. So through a number of wonderful coincidences, I linked up with people who eventually connected with me with the Johns Hopkins University Press. In the meantime, I had done a lot of additional writing, introductions, commentary. I had then been asked to cut down this very, very long memoir and focus mostly on episodes that showed Jean Simmons' own challenges, as well as her teaching and her teaching career, and then her teaching and experiences at Linwood. And I did that, and that's the book.
And can you tell us a little bit about the choices? Like it's you mentioned just just before that part of her method was to go by case studies, like to go and try to understand by examples. And the book or the memoir does the same, right? You go and each chapter we meet where we see how she meets different children and how by react to them and create relationship with them in unique way, something is happening. And I wonder about this method that you don't go to a big theory beyond, but you really go by cases or by examples. Can you elaborate more around that?
Well, it's not cases and it's not examples. What was unique about her was that right from the beginning, she was trained as a Montessori teacher in Holland. And right. She worked as a teacher, actually never in a classroom, but always with individuals or groups of children in Holland. And there's a number of chapters and that describe her work with individuals. And later then she worked at Children's House in Washington before she founded Linwood.
Yeah.
And no matter the child, no matter the problem of the child, she just accepted that child the way he or she was. There was no theory. In fact, she insisted that she did not know about autism until years into working at Linwood, even though she was a friend of Leo Kanner's, who, quote, invented autism in 1945. She was simply not interested. It didn't make any difference to her what people said about theories or about diagnosis. She looked at each child, observed their behavior, found things that she felt she could work with, and then started at that point working with the child and slowly, slowly using whatever the child offered in terms of openings, behaviors, or interests, and using them to slowly shape a more functional behavior. Now, I then had to break down that method into elements to write my first book. And, you know, I could read the whole book to describe these elements. But each child was an individual. Each child had its own journey. And the only thing that was the same was Jean's absolute acceptance. She never labeled any behavior as dysfunctional or bad. She simply said, this is what the child can do at this point. This is the best they can do with whatever limitations they have. And we need to use that and move them forward.
So what I hear is absolutely non-judgmental.
Absolutely non-judgmental.
Right.
Neither judgmental of the children, nor judgmental of the parents with whom she empathized. In fact, she founded Linwood because she felt that the children that she had been working with at Children's House were so incredibly difficult that it was simply too much for the parents to deal with. And the danger was at that time that these children would invariably end up warehoused in institutions for the rest of their lives.
So in that way, what she tried, because something that I was not, it was not clear for me, because I really felt how she accepted a child as a child is. However, I felt also that maybe she has a goal to help the child to communicate better with the people around them.
The goal was not to communicate, though communication obviously is one of the challenges of children on the spectrum.
Yes.
Language and communication is an area in which most of them are very, very severely challenged. So it's easier to work with children who already have language than children who don't. But they can, you can communicate with children and they can communicate with you in ways other than language. The goal always was, in each case, to lead a child from behaviors that isolated them, that were unhelpful, that were counterproductive, in a direction that made them, that made their behavior more functional, and that would eventually allow to integrate them into society in whatever level they were capable of. And what we have to understand in talking about the spectrum, it is a spectrum that goes from very heavily afflicted or divergent individuals to very high functioning, what used to be in the olden days called Asperger individuals, and they are now subsumed into the spectrum. And so depending on their level of intellectual functioning and their level of language, the level of their possible integration differs. So you can't ahead of time say, well, that the goal for all children is to go to a regular school or whatever other goal you might have. You have to work with what is possible on the basis of a child's genetic makeup.
And when you try to bring and like you go back and back and you said that she didn't like to create a theory, and I wonder how, if it's connected to the fact that it was hard for her for so many years to identify herself on the spectrum. And I wonder if how you look at that, not how Jean look at that, how you look at that. Like, do you find that by trying to theorize and to try to create categories, does it help? Like, would the life of Jean would be much easier if she would be identify herself as on the spectrum many years before?
No. Would have made no difference at all.
Help me to understand that.
No. Well, she functioned perfectly fine, right? She went through school, she became a teacher, she became a social worker, she became an international authority. It didn't make any difference to her professional success and her functioning.
But the personal journey.
And the fact that she was on the spectrum, had she had a diagnosis any earlier, it would not have made any difference in her inability to emotionally, to develop relationships. That there's certain characteristics of people on the spectrum that are there. So you have blue eyes or brown eyes, you have them all your life. And if somebody were to tell you that because you have blonde hair, you're more susceptible to some disease or other, there's nothing you can do about it. It just is. So a diagnosis, first of all, there was no diagnosis when Jean was born.
Right.
Diagnosis was not really even available until she was 34 years old. And she dealt with her challenges, and that's really the heart of the book. And that's what I'm much more interested in than all this theorizing, is the fact that she was able to describe what it is like to be autistic. And that would not have changed if somebody had said, oh, this child is autistic. Wouldn't have made any difference whatsoever. I'm reading from her early memories. My earliest memory is of lying in the basket with a soft shimmering light over me. I also remember the smell of roses wafting over me. There is a sense of peacefulness, of nothingness. She's about 5 months old at that point. Then everything changes. Suddenly, there is nothing but pain. It is like being blown into 1,000 small pieces. There is pain without hurt. And then there is terror without knowing what terror is. The little pieces scramble together again, whirling into a ball only to be blown apart again, and then try and finally get together again. Then the peace and nothingness returns. Roses bloom early in Belgium. So it was probably May, and I was perhaps 5 months old at the time of this memory. I think that the pain that threatened to explode my fragile self, awash in light and the scent of roses, came from the intrusion of my mother's voice. My mother had a beautiful voice and she loved babies. When she spoke to them, her voice was soft and gentle. Yet to me, it was almost unbearably painful. I do not know why, but I knew instinctively that unless I could block it out, it might destroy me. Even today, when I smell roses or see light shine through a veil, it can make me feel incredibly peaceful. And it can make me lose myself. And all sense of time and shift me back where I'm drifting weightlessly in warmth and light. This peacefulness is seductive and dangerous. It would be so easy to stay there forever. For that reason, I avoid roses and I'm afraid of them while at the same time they attract me. So you have this very early memory before there is speech.
Right.
She's trying to describe it. And when she described it, she was tense. She was struggling for words to describe this pain. And this pain, to some degree, repeats whenever there is intrusion of feeling, of emotion from others towards her, from her towards others. She has to close that down to be able to continue to function. That's not something that depends on other people's action. It simply is.
So what Jean try in her memoir to tell us, the readers, who some of us of the readers probably are not on the spectrum, which kind of dialogue she wishes to create with the reader?
What kind of dialogue does it create? Yes. With the reader?
Yes, with the readers. Like when we read this memoir and when you try to capture, to try to take from the memoir something that you want us, the readers, to take from that, what is the main teachings? What are the main teachings?
Well, the value of this memoir is exactly that. It reveals something that has not been accessible before. And so a reader, whether it be a lay person or a parent or a caretaker or a teacher,
yes,
will have insight into what it feels like to be on the spectrum, what the challenges are, how this one person has dealt with those challenges. Other people may deal with them differently, but we come to understand the main challenges, and the main challenges are emotions, emotional communications, emotional connections, social integration. Another huge challenge is, and Jean Simmons describes this also in many incidents in her childhood, is the a great difficulty that these children have with any kind of change. And she describes that in a number of ways, how she dealt with it. But it will alert us to the fact, as a reader, that change for these children is an enormous challenge, very frightening. And so when a child on the spectrum is forced to go from one situation to another and starts behaving in odd ways or aggressive ways, we then remember, this is a difficult situation. We have to help here. We have to make it easier for this child to deal with this tradition. Maybe we have to take it in smaller steps, or we at least understand why this kid is screaming or is, you know, having a shuts down or has other behaviors. So it is not a dialogue. It is a teaching. It is a revelation for people who are interested either in the phenomenon of autism, or, and especially for people who live with a person on the spectrum, a child on the spectrum. It's a gift. It's not inviting a dialogue. It's a gift that opens our eyes and then redirects our thinking, but also makes it possible to, it sort of demystifies what is a very mysterious disorder. We don't know the root causes. That's still, you know, there's still a lot of research going on into all the different possible causes. The treatment is on a hit and miss basis, kind of. But for the first time, we see insight, because the way a diagnosis is made for any psychiatric disorder or developmental disorder is by observation only. You can only see behavior. And when you diagnose these children or try to diagnose, it's mostly parental observations. It's a checklist that you put together, and then you say, yeah, blah, blah, you have 9 of 12, and yes, that puts this child on the... But you don't really, you don't know what the child really feels or faces. You only see the behavior, and the behavior may be very odd. You don't know why. Some children appear to be deaf, and they're not, but they have closed down in part because they have to defend against social input, emotional input, or because they're highly oversensitive to sound. Many of these children don't seem to feel pain. We don't know why, but we need to know that. So when they hurt themselves and they don't cry, it doesn't mean that they're not badly hurt.
Yes.
Some are excessively sensitive to light and other sensory input. And many of these phenomenon and how it affects the person are told us by Jean.
So my question is, Sabine, what was her method to teach? Since she didn't try to create a theory and to try to go to create a structure, but she communicate. It sounds that it was almost, I don't know how to say that, natural for her to communicate with the kids. I wonder how she taught her way.
Are you asking how she taught other professionals?
Yes.
She had them observe.
Can you say more?
People said, you're a miracle worker. She said, I'm not a miracle worker. Anybody can do what I do. Well, that was a little bit...
Yeah, it sounds a little bit too much.
Well, at the time, she really believed that, because at the time, she really did not yet realize that she had a special insight. But she said, it's all based on observation. And that is one of the things that is unique to her method, was that there was always a very long, well, with some children it was longer, with other children it wasn't as long, period of simply observing them in the ways that they approached the world, or not, or hid from the world.
Yes.
And when you went to Linwood, as I did, trying to figure out what was going on, you just watched. And you watched what the teachers did, and you watched the interventions, and you asked, why? Why at this point did you do this? Well, because I saw that this child had made this move, so it told me that he or she's ready for the next step. And if you watched long enough, you started understanding what they were looking for, how they were using what the child revealed to move them on. And it was all by example, and that's why it needed, or they felt it needed, my book, because once Jean wasn't there anymore to teach by example, they felt that, and you know, the world, the whole world could not come to Linwood to watch for a year. It needed something written down. But that parsing that I did was really, and obviously Jean approved each chapter, was trying to figure out each of the steps of the interventions that they used to slowly shape behavior or move a child forward. Mm-hmm. But observation was the absolute key. And when you read her descriptions of how she worked with some non-autistic children, like this little boy, Peter, you see that she did nothing for a long time. She simply interacted with the child, watched him, let him be, and then at a point where she had him, because he had a certain interest, he had something he wanted. He wanted her little sister to come and visit. That's when she had him. That's when she had a little entry, and she used it and moved him into a public school eventually.
So thank you so much for bringing us behind the mirror.
You're very welcome. It is a story and a person that was very close to my heart.
Thank you for doing that.